Shalom. We're in Piskah Lamed Aleph, 31, of Rav Kook's commentary of Enaya. And the Gemara, Masechet Shabbat, Daf Kav Gimel, page 23, reads as follows. If you remember, we've been talking about lighting candles, and how candles represent wisdom in Torah. Devitu de Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef's wife, Havit Ma'achra Umadlaket Leh. She was late to lighting candles. Very common problem in a lot of Jewish households. Amar la Rav Yosef, Tanina, Rav Yosef pointed out to his wife, Hare, we learned on the Pasuk in Shmot, chapter 13, Exodus 13, Lo yamush amud anan yomam v'amud ha'esh laila. The idea that the pillar of cloud will not move and the during the day, and the pillar of fire will not leave during the night. What does it come to teach? Rashi points out, Lo yamish krayetero lahach drasha dakti vashem holech lifneim yomam. Right, the psukim already say that God walked before us during the day with a pillar of cloud, and at night he walked before us with a pillar of fire. If so, what is this pasuk saying that the pillar of cloud will not leave and the pillar of fire will not leave? What it's come to teach us. Milamed, she'amuda anan mashlim le'amuda ish. Ve'amuda ish mashlim le'amuda anan. That it wasn't just the cloud during the day and the pillar of fire at night, but towards the end of the day, the pillar of fire would already appear a little early. And towards the end of the night, the pillar of cloud would also appear a little early. There'd be a little overlapping. Svara lakduma. So Rav Yosef's wife thought to move up the lighting candles, and she started lighting apparently very early, too early. Amar la hu saba tanina. So an old man saw it, and he said, "Didn't we learn ubilvad shelo yakdim ubilvad shelo yacher?" Right? It's good to light Nerot Shabbat, to light the candles early, not just at the last minute before sunset. On the other hand, if you light them too early, you don't recognize that they're being lit for the sake of Nerot Shabbat. You think that you're lighting them because you like light, or you know, maybe it's a little cloudy or something like that. Sorry? Bikitsur, we see that it's good to light a little early, but not too early. Okay? And this is going to be classic Rav Kook. You could already just tell from the Gemara. This is, there are two opposite things which are going to harmonize. And on the one hand, and on the other hand. Or HaShabbat, HaMe'ir, UMe'aneg, Marbe Shalom, UKedusha. Right, Nerot Shabbat here, Rav Kook summarizes 4 points. It gives us light. Remember, Shabbat is, you can't light fire on Shabbat, so you light it beforehand. Ume'aneg, but it's also not just for the light, but also for the oneg, for the, halacha l'shavet po. It's kacha shani, yeah, the term uzam, tada. That the Shabbat also, I know Rav Riskin once spoke about this, that even during today, in modern times, where our real light is electricity, it's still very important, even though halachically, according to most poskim, you can be yotze, you can make a bracha, ladlik ner shel Shabbat, at least on old-fashioned light bulbs. Fluorescence is a problem. But on old-fashioned light bulbs, you can make a bracha. Nevertheless, Rav Soloveitchik used to say, it's important to continue lighting those wax candles or the olive oil candles. Why? It's oneg. It's romantic, right? Even if you go to a wedding and they have a lot of lights going on, very often they'll light candles on the table for ambience, right? For the good feeling. So that's the second aspect. So first aspect of the Shabbos candles is Meir, to give light. Number two, Me'aneg, to add that pleasance, pleasure. Number three, Hamarbe Shalom, right? That is the Lashon, the wording of the Gemara, which says, why do we light Nerot Shabbat? So that there's peace in the house. What does it mean, peace in the house? Rashi explains that you shouldn't trip over the furniture. Others explain that it's also connected with the general atmosphere of the Shabbat.
Why does it say a marbesh increase the
Shabbat
in the house?
That it, there might be, like Rav Kook says, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom, right? Ukedusha, and also it adds an element of holiness. As we've seen, the idea of the Shabbos candles symbolizes the light of Torah, the light of wisdom. And here there's a long parenthesis. Ora chayim v'shalom anoveya minach ha-kedushat ha-emuna v'bitachon be'oz Hashem anikna b'kedushat ha-shabbat. Right? The idea of the bitachon, the faith, the trust that we trust in God, that even though it's sort of like Shemitah, right? What is the idea of Shemitah about? That we don't work in the seventh year. We trust in God that He'll give us enough from the previous years. The same thing. We trust in God by not working on Shabbat. That the famous mashal of the Chafetz Chaim. He said that just like if you have a big barrel of water, it doesn't make a difference if you put 6 spigots on it or 7 spigots on it. The same amount of water is going to come out, whether you work 6 days, whether you work 7 days. So the idea of Shabbat also is connected with the idea of having trust and faith in the light of the Torah, that is the true light. Bilibam shel Yisrael, this is the end of the parentheses. So let's just read it again without the parentheses. There's something that's, we've done this a lot, I'm sure you noticed before, when Rav Kook has these really long sentences, what you have to do is find where to put the parentheses and then read it before and after without the parentheses. Okay? So here it's obvious. Bayro et lev et halev l'ora Torah bilibam shel Yisrael. Right? When the Shabbos candles light, this light of Torah and trust and faith in the heart of Israel, Romez Gamken, in addition to everything that we've said, it also hints, alludes to the idea, Bichlal l'ora gdola ha'atida la'ir kol mechshekei aretz or Hashem uchvodo be'ofio ba'olam et timalei ha'aretz dea et Hashem liyom shekulo Shabbat. The idea of Shabbat also talks about the ideal world. In the times of the Messiah, when we talk about Yom Shekulo Shabbat, it will be a day or a generation where everything is Shabbat. Every day is Shabbat. And that is symbolized by another pasuk where the Isaiah tells us that ideal world will be also expressed in the idea of Mal'ah Ha'aretz Deyat Hashem, that the whole world will know God. Again, light, the world is going to be enlightened, and that light is likened to the light of Shabbat and the light of the Torah, which will fill the world. So that's the topic for today. The ideal, when the world is going to be totally light, how is that going to come about? Harchavat da'at ha-Torah v'da'at Elokim Hema me'orot la'achin levavam shel ha'ru'uyim lekabel et or ha'atid. The idea of broadening the knowledge of Torah, broadening the knowledge of God, something that we've spoken about before. If you remember, several years ago we learned the article Dat Elokim, Know God, which at first glance seems to be an oxymoron, that how can you know God, right? In the words of Sefer HaYikarim, Im yida'ativ hayitiv, right? If I would know God, I would be God. Only God can understand God. I, on the other hand, Shlomo HaMelech tells David tells his son Shlomo, Solomon, Da'et Elokei Avicha, Vavdehu be'lev shalem u'benefesh chafetza. Know the God of your father so that you can serve him with motivation. Now, how can you know something that you can't know? So Rav Kook explains that there are two aspects of God. One is the aspect of his essence, The essence of God we cannot understand. That's what Rav Yosef Albo is talking about. On the other hand, what can we understand? Dimu otcha velo kefi yeshcha, vayishavucha lefi ma'asecha. We liken God according to his actions, according to his attributes, according to his nicknames. And that is the God that we can imitate, imitati odei, that we've spoken about many times. The tzelem elokim, to copy God. So the idea of broadening the knowledge of God and his ways, his attributes, through the knowledge of Torah, because the Torah is the ways of God, and direct us to teach us how to be more godly. Ubasher et lechol chefetz. Here Rav Kook is getting into the Gemara. For those who came late, take a look at the Gemara so you'll understand what Rav Kook is talking about. The idea of doing everything in its right time. Basher et lechol chefetz, pasuk from Kohelet, that there is a time and a place for everything. Timing is of the essence. Timing is something very important in life. I'm sure everybody has had examples of this, where you do something in the wrong time and it doesn't work. And if you would have done it in the right time, or if you have siyata d'shmaya, if God helps you out, and this has happened to me so many times on the internet, that you write something, a letter to somebody, and you send, and for those living on a yishuv, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves mitnachlim, and very often, there's no internet, no problems with the lines, and it's happened to me tens, without exaggeration, tens of times that bizchut, because I wasn't able to send the letter, I then think again, hey, maybe I shouldn't send this letter. Or maybe I should have worded something differently. And then I go back and I fix it, and then I can send it, and then it goes. It's happened literally tens of times. And a lot of things in life. Timing is very important, right? The times make the man makes the times. You really need both. V'zeh or be'atzmo. V'zeh or be'atzmo. This light itself. Maybe we'll just start tying it in with the Gemara. The idea with the Gemara says that the wife of Rabbi Yosef, who first she lit a little too late, and then she wanted to light too early. And the Gemara says, no, you have to write in the right time. It's good to light early, but not too early. This is the idea of tahalichim, of processes. The world is built on slowly but surely. The Yerushalmi, which we mentioned many times at the beginning of the Talmud Yerushalmi. Kachi gulatan shel Yisrael, kima kima. The redemption of Israel, it's a process. Slowly but surely, slowly but surely. Basara ma'amarot nivra ha'olam. The Maharal explains, why didn't God just snap his fingers and let the world be? Why did it have to be in stages? That is the essence of the world. The whole world is based on stages. And as we mentioned many times, not everyone has been here so long, but maybe I'll, when I had the zchut of learning many years with Rav Waldman, the Rosh Hashiva of Kiryat Arba, that's where I learned most of the writings of Rav Kook. And we had a chug, 40 minutes or so every morning before davening, just myself and one other guy, and we went through the books of Rav Kook, b'kiyut. And after two or three years, I noticed, and I pointed it out to this other guy, my friend David, said, did you ever notice that no matter what we ask, Rav Waldman always answers the same answer. Yesh madrigot shonot. It's talking about different levels, different stages. And he said, no, I never noticed. I said, no, next time one of us asks a question, you'll notice. So the next day, I was looking for a question, and I found a question, something that he wrote that apparently contradicted something that we had learned elsewhere in Rav Kook. And so I asked, isn't that a contradiction? And Rav Waldman answered, Yesh madrigot shonot. It's talking about different levels. It's not a contradiction. So David and I both cracked up. We started laughing. And Rav Waldman asked, what's so funny? So I told him, we've noticed that no matter what the issue is, you always answer the same answer. So he said, Boker Tov Eliyahu. It took you a couple years to realize that? Because the world has a lot of apparent contradictions, but it's just at first glance. There's a hava mina. It seems that there are contradictions, but it's just talking about different levels. And by the way, that's what Tosfot does also. That's Professor Urbach has a beautiful classic work called the Balei HaTosafot. And when he summarizes, what is Tosfot about? Tosfot, he does, as opposed to Rashi, who just explains the page that you're learning in the Gemara, the line that you're learning in Gemara, Rashi almost never, usually doesn't deal with the fact that this Gemara might contradict another Gemara on the other side of Shas. Tosfot, that's his job. He says, this Gemara contradicts that Gemara. Inevitably, what he does is usually what's called an ukimta. Right? This is talking about on this level, this is talking about on this level. And we're talking about different cases or different people or different times. And what Rav Kook is saying, and that's what the Maharal is saying, why is timing so important? Because the process, the world is built on processes. The world is not built on bang and you're finished. And therefore, timing is so important, not to do things too early, not to do things too late. The children, they have the song, Lama lo kol yom Shabbat. You know, let's make Shabbat every day. Or Madua lo yachol Purim pamayim b'shavua. Why don't we make Purim twice a week? And the answer is, you need the process. You need the 6 days, the work days, until, in order to appreciate the Shabbat, in order to build up to Shabbat. In other words, the relationship between light and darkness, both are important. Well, you might think that light is more important than darkness. We all know that God doesn't make mistakes, and both are very important. And even when we're told to light the light a little early, don't light it too early. Don't overdo it. Everything has to be in its right time. And otherwise, you jump the gun, and just like picking fruit, when you pick them early, it's sour. You have to wait till it ripens. Then it's sweet, then it has the juice, and that is the way of the world. Savlanut, patience. This is connected with the Kabbalistic idea also of tzimtzum. The idea of tzimtzum, that God, as if it were a, how would you say tzimtzum? Contracted himself as if it were, in order to hide himself, in order to create the world. To leave room for man. Okay? So the idea is, if man is supposed to be godly, then we also have this time for tzimtzum. Right? That man also has to sometimes just wait. Hold back. Mitapek. Wait for the right time. Right. Everything is right in the right time. When the right time comes to shine the light, and the world is going to be ready for the great light of Mashiach, the great light of Torah, who mo'il u'miyasher u'mikarev l'or Hashem tuvol v'amito, hine im yitametz echad lorido la'iro terim ba'ito. If somebody says, I want Mashiach now, and the world isn't ready for it, it might cause more harm than good. Right? God knows how to run the world, and this is something that we've seen very much before in Rav Kook a lot of times. If you remember when Rav Kook talks about science and Darwin's theory of evolution. And he writes that if Darwin's theory of evolution would have revealed itself 1,000 years beforehand, it would not have been good for man to think of ourselves as apes, right? Or in one of his letters he writes, if man would have known, primitive man would have known that the world is constantly moving, he'd be scared to build buildings, right? Man, when he thought the world was holy heliocentric, geocentric,
earth-centered,
going around the earth, that was good for man. that man should think that the world is homocentric, that mankind is important. On the other hand, when man started getting a little too arrogant, putting himself too much in the middle, God helped us find the telescope, and we found out that the world is heliocentric. And it would not have been good if the theories would not have been around in the right time, in the right place. Okay, the same thing with the Beit HaMikdash, same thing with the Sanhedrin. The same thing we saw about Simchonut, about vegetarianism, right? Rav Kook is very much in favor of the ideal of vegetarianism. But don't jump stages. You've got to wait until the right time. Otherwise, it might boomerang. And instead of treating animals like people, you might treat the people like animals, like we saw happen in the generation of the flood, where people were marrying animals and eating people. The same thing, Sanhedrin. Rav Kook himself set up the chief rabbinate. Part of the idea, there were 23 members, was to be the first stage in setting up the Sanhedrin. Now, it sounds very brave and very visionary, but there is a mitzvah d'oraita. It's one of the 613 mitzvot to set up a Sanhedrin. It's something that we should all be doing. It didn't work out. Rav Kook was the first one to realize that the time hasn't come yet. And in one of his letters, he writes, it's a good thing that there's not a Sanhedrin, right? The last thing we need to do is to stone people who observe Shabbat. Right? That's not who violate Shabbat. That's not what is going to bring people to identify with Torah. So God does, on the one hand, he commanded us eternally to always try and build a Sanhedrin. On the other hand, parenthetically, there's this asterisk that try your hardest, but you should know it won't work until the time is ripe, just like fruit. You've got to have the patience, the right timing. The same thing with the Korbanot. That was the article that, did you see the article I printed in Makor Rishon about a month ago? The story of Agnon, where Agnon, Rav Aviner, had his doubts about the veracity of the story. But I found a testimony that Agnon says that Rav Kook told him explicitly that one of the tragedies of his life was that he wanted to restart the sacrificial work in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple in Jerusalem. But two people stopped him. One was Chaim Weizmann from the Jewish Agency, because he didn't appreciate the importance of Korbanot. And the other was Ronald Storrs, the British governor of Yerushalayim, who was religious. And he prevented Rav Kook, Davka, because he did understand what the Korbanot, the significance
Ronald
of the...
Ronald Storrs was a goy, though.
That's what I said. The British governor of Yerushalayim. And... on the one hand, some people asked, but doesn't Rav Tzvi Yehuda say all the time that Rav Kook said, and he said this at the Vadat HaKotel, when the British in 29, Tarpat, invited him to say, what is the Jewish opinion of the Kotel, of the Temple Mount? And he said that the Kotel, the Wailing Wall, Western Wall, definitely belongs to us. What's behind the wall, that we're going to let God take care of. Not to build the Beit HaMikdash, to let God take care of it. When's it going to happen? We don't know. So it seems to contradict. By the way, you're also among the students of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. You have Rav Yisrael Ariel from the Machon HaMikdash, who says if Rav Kook was alive today, there was also Rav Elitzur Segal. He put out Orot HaMikdash, where he compiled a lot of different letters of Rav Kook, which seemed to infer that Rav Kook would like to start to rejuvenate the sacrifice on Har HaBayit. On the other hand, again, this is Rav Kook, on the other hand, there are places where he writes that if it turns out that the Sanhedrin or the rabbis will decide that not to have animal sacrifices, but just vegetarian sacrifices, he finds five different ways, in one of the recent notebooks that was recently publicized, five different halachic ways to justify how we can do it. So somebody who's not used to Rav Kook will say, What's going on? Is he in favor? Is he against? Is he in favor? Is he against? The answer is what we've seen tens of times together. The b'di'evet of man is the lechatchila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When man tries something, and even is commanded to build a Beit HaMikdash, is commanded to set up a Sanhedrin, is commanded to make Aliyah to the land of Israel, but b'di'evet it doesn't work. As long as it doesn't work, that is the lechatchila of God. God is the one who's arranging things in a way that it's not. He doesn't want it to work out. The same thing for 17, 18, 1900 years. It was always in the Shulchan Aruch that you should live in the land of Israel. Nevertheless, it didn't work. It wasn't doable. 100 years ago, it started to become doable. Today, it is extremely doable. That's a sign that the time has come. And that's the answer to the three oaths in Masechet Ketuvot, page 110, that says that we swore that we will not come back to the land and take the land of Israel until it's time. How do you know when it's time? Open your eyes and see whether that obligation, which was always there, whether it's succeeding. If you read the newspapers or the history books over the last 100 years, it's very clear that the time to return to the land of Israel has come. To the same extent, it's also very clear that the time of the Sanhedrin has yet to come, and the time of the Beit HaMikdash has yet to come. All three of them are positive commandments of the 613 commandments. Nevertheless, that's exactly the point, and that's where Rav Kook is saying. You have to try and move things up. Light Shabbos candles early. Don't wait for God to bring in the Mashiach on his own. Man has to take the initiative. On the other hand, don't do it too early. Don't force it. If it's not going, don't bang your head against the wall. To summarize, try your hardest, but be willing to accept the fact that God is the one who is going to decide in the end whether you will succeed or not. And the same thing is regarding just about everything in Jewish history. Maybe we'll skip down a little. And I was going to finish the Piska. Muvan hadavar. You see, it's towards the towards like the bottom third. Was that the camera? Battery? Did you hear some beep?
I did, yeah.
Okay. Muvan hadavar she'inan pu'ulot motarot la'atzman ki'im mechubarot la'achshir et pu'ulat e'ara ve'hin pu'alot chalifot b'yirida ve'aliyah aliyah ve'yirida hakol beseder aruch mi'amesader ha'elyonit barach. Here, again, is a concept that we've seen before, and that's part of the beauty of Rav Kook, that he has a ikvi, a consistent way of saying a lot of different topics, in a very harmonic way. This is the concept of ichud ha-hofachim, uniting the opposites. Hare, darkness and light are opposites. Galut and geula are opposites. The six-day work week and Shabbat are opposites. So if they're opposites, what is this idea of the pillar of fire overlapped with the cloud, and the cloud overlapped with the fire, and each one came in a little early? Rav Kook is saying that in a childish, immature way of seeing things, we see things as opposites. You go into a kindergarten, and you ask them, what is the opposite of boy? And they will say girl. But only after about another 15 or 16 years will they realize that boys and girls are not opposites, but they complement each other. The difference makes a very special chemistry. And just like immature man thought that plus and minus contradicted each other, and it took thousands of years before man found that electricity is based on the plus and the minus and the opposites. And the same thing with a lot of chemical reactions, and the same thing with the fire and the water and Kodesh and Chol and Shabbat and weekday and the fire and the cloud. The cloud darkens. What is a cloud? A cloud darkens. So what is the idea of the pillar of the cloud? How did that lead us? When there's light, you have a little darkness to offset the light. Because nothing is 100%. You need that opposite. The same thing at night, which is darkness. You need the pillar of fire to light it up. But the immature way, when you learn more, when a person matures, he realizes that these opposites are not really opposites, that they're meant to complement, they're meant to overlap. This is something that we've seen before, that the Kabbalah says that in a round world, the further you get away from a point, the more you return to the same point. In other words, there really is no such thing as opposites. There are optical illusions of opposites, but they really are meant to complement each other. And the same thing with time, the same thing with trying to bring something in and trying to bring it in early, but knowing that you can't bring it in too early, and God is the one who runs the show.